There you go.
Today is Monday, March 19th. A quorum being present, the Committee on Local Government and Elections will come to order. First on today's agenda, first bill is House File 2132, Senator Vandeveer. Do you have an amendment, Senator?
I do, Mr. Chair, the A2 amendment.
Everybody have, should be in the packets.
It just makes it clear that the local governments have the approval, the right to approve projects and locations. But it does it specifically to Washington County, and that to the entire state is the intent.
Any discussion on the A2 amendment? Seeing none. All those in favor, signify by saying yes.
Yes.
Those opposed, no. Motion carries. More enthusiasm.
Now we have testifiers. I don't know who'd like to go first.
Senator Vandeveer.
To explain why we need this again. Would you?
Sure.
Just one moment. Just like to remind everybody, this was a bill that we had heard previously, and the problem with it then was it was too broad in scope, so covered the whole state. So Senator Vandeveer went back to some folks and narrowed it down, in this case, specific to Washington County. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Barbara Dacey. I'm the executive director of the Washington County Housing and Redevelopment Authority. I will be brief. The Washington County HRA enabling law was adopted in 1974 as a special law, and the intent of this bill is simply to update the special law to confirm that the Washington County HRA is a county housing and redevelopment authority under Minnesota statutes. Second, the purpose is to confirm that the HRA has jurisdiction throughout the county within each municipality, whether or not they have a municipal housing and redevelopment authority. So I will leave it at that, and should you need more information, I'm happy to respond to questions.
Thank you.
I guess we're good unless you have questions, Mr. Chair.
I have no questions. Any questions? Senator Kielash?
Mr. Chair, does this change any of the approval process, or I'm not sure if what you're saying, is that all that's going to happen with this, or is this going to be subject to, say, Met Council Housing Authority or State Housing Authority? Does it limit any of their ability to...
Mr. Chair, Senator, I don't believe so. Ms. Stengel can clarify that if you'd like.
Ms. Stengel?
Mr. Chair and Senator Kielash, no. And this is basically just clarifying only for Washington County, sort of doing what they're already doing. It doesn't change anything else.
Okay, thank you.
Any further discussion or comments, questions? Seeing none, Senator Vandeveer moves that House File 2132 as amended be recommended to pass and placed on general orders. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Those opposed, say no. Motion prevails. House File 2132 is amended, recommended to pass and placed on general orders. Thank you, Senator Vandeveer.
There was better enthusiasm than
that. What do you say?
We're more enthusiastic.
Okay. Next bill on the agenda is House File 2392. Senator Vandeveer, to your bill.
Mr. Chair and members, this is designed to clear up the same issue as the Washington County, is to just restate the status of the Anoka County HRA. And we have a witness here who can clarify what the situation is here in Anoka County.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Karen Skepper. I'm the Director of Community and Economic Development for Anoka County. As Senator Vandeveer said, our bill is very similar to the Washington County one. However, there's one distinct change. Our practice has been very different than most counties that have an HRA. Because we came to the game a little bit late, we didn't actually start our levy until 1994. There were many, many active HRAs within the county. So our county made the decision to only levy a tax in those cities that did not currently have an HRA. That worked very well. We served the townships. We served the smaller communities that did not have an HRA up until a couple of years ago, where we ran into an issue with the actual language in our enabling bill. Minnesota Statute 383E.17 reads, "The section shall not limit or restrict any existing housing and redevelopment authority or prevent a municipality from creating an authority. The county shall not exercise jurisdiction where a municipal authority is established." That word is what caused us some trouble. Black's Law defines the word is as past, present, or future. Because we have senior housing buildings and other obligations, we're concerned that if we don't update the language in our legislation, other cities may form HRAs, pull out, and we would have no ability to meet our obligations. So the gist of this bill is to affirm that we have the authority to tax in the cities that have not formed HRAs prior to May 3, 2011, which was the date of the court ruling. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Senator Roebling?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I guess I understand why a city that has formed its own HRA doesn't want to get two levies. So is there a limitation on the amount that the county HRA can charge on the people from the city who now have their own HRA?
Chairman, committee member,
each
city that has its own HRA has local approval and local authority. If they choose to work with the county HRA to do a project, they may be subject to both authorities levying a tax. But it's done by city council resolution, and they actually go through a process of opting into our program. At this time, there are three cities that have opted in to do major projects.
So, Mr. Chair.
Senator Roebling.
So, will the city that just formed its own HRA, East Bethel, apparently, will they be bound to continue paying for the county's HRA projects in perpetuity, or will once the obligations that were incurred prior to them forming their own, once those are paid off, will they be done with the county HRA unless they have an agreement with the county?
Mr. Chairman, committee member, that is correct. There are no obligations at this time. East Bethel has its own HRA. We are not levying a tax there. And we will not unless, for some reason, they ask us to join our operations again. This just clearly defines the fact that they are out, are levying on their own without our jurisdiction interfering with them.
And Mr. Chair, if I could.
Senator Vandeveer.
Could we ask Ms. Stengel to confirm that this bill has the same local approval as it's written, or did it need any other amendment to make it clear that there would be local approval of a county project and location?
Ms. Stengel?
Mr. Chair and Senator Vandeveer, yes, there is local approval required for the project and the location of the project. It's in Section 2. The language is a little bit different than the Washington County bill, but it does the same thing.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Stengel. Any further questions? Senator Kielash.
I'm not sure I'm getting all of this right. So if a community establishes a new HRA, they can opt out of the county HRA levy. And what I'm curious about is that if you've already done something in that community, can they opt out of that? And if all these communities do it, at some point, do you run out of the countywide HRA's ability to do good work, I guess? So,
Ms.
Mr. Chairman, committee member, that's exactly why we are attempting to fix this legislation. If we do not fix it, that's exactly what can happen. But by putting a date specific of May 3rd, 2011,
HRA, any city that's in our program will remain there. Any city that was not within our operation is on their own, or at some point they can join. But we need to preserve our authority to support our projects. We currently have 4 senior housing projects with almost 200 units total. We don't want to see our resources and our authority decline to the point where we cannot support those projects.
Just to follow up.
Mr.
Chair, if so what I'm concerned about is that those municipalities that have already opted into their own HRAs, are they getting any of the services, benefits of the county HRA that they're not paying for? Is that going to just mean that the current the communities that are currently with the county HRA are going to be funding the whole countywide activities?
Mr. Chairman.
Skipper.
Committee member. We have operated with a system where any taxes levied in a community are held in a fund balance for that community. We've always had the local approval in place. So the 4 cities that have senior housing projects specifically approved those projects and pledged their levy towards those projects. Other cities that are in our area of jurisdiction use those fund balances to support housing and redevelopment activities as that city in particular feels needed. So at this point, there are only a few projects that we levy countywide for, and we pay for that out of our general administrative fund, and we provide those specific services on a countywide basis, regardless of whether they're in the area of operation or not. That would be something like a countywide market study,
okay,
which we would make available to the public.
Thank you. Any further questions? Senator Roebling.
If this happened in Anoka County, is this something that we should have been considering statewide?
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Skipper.
Committee member. Most counties have fixed their language. The language is from the early 70s, and when we formed, most counties were still using this language. We did not go back and fix the language, as did not Washington County. So that's why we're here today. We're the last counties to make the fix.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Anyone else like to speak against House File 2392 or against House File 2392 from the audience? Seeing none, Senator Vandeveer moves that Senate File 2392 be recommended to pass and placed on general orders. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion prevails. House File 2392 is recommended to pass and placed on general orders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Okay, the next bill on the agenda is Senate File 2369. Senator Limmer, your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. 2369 involves the Three Rivers Park District that's located in Hennepin County. As our members may be aware, their representation is created partially by representative vote and also by appointed vote. I believe that the county that represents 2 positions as appointments, and then the the others are elected as commissioners by the public. So it's kind of a bifurcated representation. This particular bill, putting it all in a little eggshell, is that this would change it to 7 elected positions rather than have a partial appointment by a governing authority. I can stand for any questions, Mr. Chair. Oh, I also have Mayor Hartos from Greenfield that would also like to make a presentation on the bill.
Care to go ahead with your presentation? State your name for the tape, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jerry Hartos. I'm the mayor of the city of Greenfield. Constituents have made it clear to us that they would prefer to have all of the positions of the Three Rivers Park District being elected. Some of the communities in the western part of Hennepin County have situations where there's quite a bit of park, Three Rivers Park District property within their communities. This is true in Minnetrista. It's also true, for example, in Greenfield, where approximately 11 to 12% of our in total acre base is controlled by Three Rivers Park District. So I concur with Senator Limmer's comments about it is kind of a bifurcated system. We feel in terms of having a full representation where you have a taxing authority that all of these people should be elected rather than appointed.
Thank you. Any questions? Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Three Rivers Park District operates some pretty major parks outside of Hennepin County. Mm-hmm. We have several in Scott County. I know of at least one major one in Carver County. And I guess sometimes I'm a little concerned that we have an advisory council that does some advising to the park board, but we don't have any real say, even though we have these pretty big land masses that are in control of another entity. I guess I'm just kind of wondering how they're could be enough representation for those communities too that have those big parks in their communities, because they are significant land holdings, and I don't think we get the benefit of having them there as well. I mean, like Scott County residents use those parks as well as Hennepin County residents, it always kind of puzzled me about how they were controlled only by Hennepin County in reality when they're outside of their jurisdiction. But I don't know if electing more people to the board from Hennepin County is going to solve the problem or, kind of answer the questions I have. And I think Three Rivers, maybe they have parks in Washington. I don't know where else they might have parks, but I do know they work with Carver and Scott.
Mayor Hartos or Senator Limmer?
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Roebling, it's true the district or the park district overlaps outside of Hennepin County from time to time in other counties. But the question of representation for any governing authority really should be in the hands of the people, not by an appointment process by politicians on a county board. If we really think that that's the way we should run government, I don't see why that would harm this type of a park system at all. Matter of fact, it might even make it better. So in looking at the way this has been established, I would think that people from outside of Hennepin County might be concerned that Hennepin County has 2 seats at the table all the time officially by the mandate of the county board. No other county has that, I don't think. I don't think your county has that in Carver. Scott, is it Scott that you're in? But Carver is the closest one. And so in light of that, perhaps the better representation is just from the public. So that's kind of the merit of this particular bill before you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roebling.
Well, in our county, we don't have any elected park board. there's a park advisory board to the county board, but the county board does the levy, and we don't have a separate levy for parks in Scott County, and I don't know if many counties do. So Hennepin is probably unique in that regard. Maybe Ramsey has it. I don't know. But it is. I think it's unusual to have an elected park board. But maybe it's necessary because of the size of Hennepin County. But I'm just wondering, if you have seven, what kind of districts will they be? Will they correlate with commissioner districts? How many commissioners are there in Hennepin County?
Seven.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that would work out pretty well, because then you'd have a matchup. You could make those commissioner districts the park board members districts too. Is that what you were thinking?
Well, I don't think that has been determined. That would be by a redistricting process. If the county commissioners who would design it that way, I suppose they could do it in that manner. But I haven't heard any discussion as to whether or not it would mirror or overlap exactly the commissioner districts.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Wilbling.
I think it would be confusing to voters if it did not, only because they would have to remember just another district that they're a part of. It just might be more complicated at the polling places.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Wilbling, I know that Hennepin County has some tremendous parks in it, and in the Three River, in the Three River Parks District, there's, as you say, very vast land holdings. They're very large. I have two of them that kind of touch into my Senate district, and then there's others up in Champlin, which is just really, really close. You can almost see it from our border. And then going to the south, you have French Park down along Medicine Lake, which is only maybe a mile and a half from the southern border. I can see where a lot of these park districts could be concentrated into one commissioner district, or a disproportionate amount. Take, for example, Commissioner Johnson's district, District 7. His district would have all of those in his district, touching in some manner, or a bike path that connects. And so he could have really a disproportionate amount of district Three River Parks in his district, while there could be some that may not have much of any district.
Senator Limmer, I think Ms. Stangl says that she can shed some light on this if you care to.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Wilbling, to the question that you raised, the bill right now does call for all seven commissioners to be elected. Two of them are at large, so there would only be five districts. So my guess is they would probably be different than the county commissioner districts.
That's right.
To that, Mr. Chair.
Senator Kulesh.
Ms. Stangl, is there any language that says who designs the boundaries of the districts?
Stangl.
Or who's responsible for the maps?
Mr. Chair and Senator Kulesh, I'm not sure I know that it's done after redistricting. I'll look into that, and I'll get back to you shortly.
I'm wondering what entity would be doing that as well.
Sure. I'll look into that, Senator Kulesh.
Okay. Additional questions? Senator Kulesh.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, I know that Three Rivers does a pretty decent job with stuff. Is there an issue here that I'm not aware of about it's being poorly managed? They're making decisions that the rest of the community doesn't like. Is it, you know, what exactly is the need for this, other than just, yeah, I realize you want to get more elected representation. One of my issues that I have with this, though, is I think it relates to some of Senator Roebling's, and that is it's not really a county park. It's a, you know, Southwest Metro or Southwest and South Metro park system here that we're talking about. So could you just give us a little more information on that, Senator Limmer?
Senator Limmer. Mayor.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kulesh and Senator Wilbling, I think, touched a little bit on it. In her county, for example, it is the elected commissioners that are making the financial decisions about where the money is going to be spent and how it's allocated, even though you have a park advisory. In the case of Three Rivers Park, so much of what is its land holding and resource is, you know, in the exurban areas of the county. That's generally a feeling that oftentimes it's a political influence of where the money gets spent is influenced by appointment as to what your affiliation is and what your political persuasion is as to where do you bring the beef home.
Mr. Chair, can I just follow up on that? Can you give me some examples? Is there one park that's getting more funding than another that's causing this? Or is that, I mean, that's kind of what you're inferring, and I'm not I'm not familiar with anything in particular. So
yeah. Thank you. I cannot give you any specifics. I'm speaking with the sentiments of our constituency who find it appalling that we have these very huge taxing authorities with that yield pretty large budgets and that all of the people are not elected. So I'm representing my constituents that they feel that the appointment process, when five are elected and two are appointed, that's not...
So just to follow up, there isn't any specific... issue with the management under the current system that you're talking about. It's more about the elected. You think they ought to be elected?
Correct.
One more. Yeah, and that is that isn't there a possible that if you have all elected commissioners, you could end up with a worse system than what you've got now?
Well, I suppose in the real world, any scenario is possible.
Yeah. I mean, so okay. Thank you.
Yeah,
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Dangle.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kielash, I suppose we only have to look at the Minnesota legislature as being totally represented by elected citizens. And
I agree with
we certainly can bring that up to such a high standard for us to consider.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, I agree the 2010 election was a disaster. So, Ms. Dangle.
Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I guess I'd like to help maybe I'd like to help maybe answer Senator Kielash's question with a little bit more clarity. When I was first elected to the Senate, I had the opportunity to serve on the Legislative Commission addressing the Coon Rapids Dam, which is currently under the management of the Three Rivers Park District. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I learned very very quickly in that process is that there's a good argument to be made that there were things that weren't being taken care of that should be. And the net result of that, even after the Park District had received substantial funding and was from the very beginning when they took over that Coon Rapids Dam, charged with the obligation of maintaining that, that didn't happen. And now what you see is the entire state is in jeopardy because we have this Asian carp issue, and this Coon Rapids Dam is one of those barriers to that, but that hasn't been upkept, and we have not been able to address that. So I would say that in combination with that process, I've had an opportunity to look into the park district's budget, compare it to some other park districts, including Anoka's Park District budget and just how they manage people and dollars. And I would say that those are two stellar examples of where if there were more elected officials on that, you know, on the Three Rivers Park District board, that hopefully those things wouldn't happen the same way. If they were, I think that you through election would have a much better recourse as a constituent to address those, and maybe we wouldn't be in some of the situations where we are right now with those. So to answer your question, I think there is a reasonable case to be made.
Ms. Stangle has some clarification on the redistricting.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Kielash, it is the park board that does the redistricting. So after the state is redistricted, they redivide themselves into five new districts.
Hmm. That sounds problematic. So you get to redesign the district into whatever lines you choose to if you're on the board currently?
And like the legislature, Senator Keeler.
I don't think that happened this time, Mr. Chair.
No, not quite. Senator McGuire.
Okay. I'm trying to understand this completely. As I read this appendix here, it said that five were elected from outside of Minneapolis in the past. Is that correct? So the five districts we're talking about do not include Minneapolis. So if we were to do two at large, do they include all of Hennepin County, or do they only include the part of Hennepin County not in the city of Minneapolis? I'm trying to understand how this board operates, I guess. Then the other question is, do they have full levy authority without going back to the county board? And then does their levy show up as a separate line item on the property tax statements, or is it just lumped in with the other special taxing districts that appear on many property tax statements?
Senator Lemmer, did you want to?
How does Minneapolis representation? Yeah, that'd be great.
Senator,
we're going to call Commissioner Mike Opatz, even though he may be not so much a friendly testifier, but he knows all the right answers as far as the background on the redistricting.
Welcome to the committee. Could you state your name for the
Thank
table?
You, Mr. Chair. My name is Mike Opad. I'm the chairman of the Hennepin County Board, and I am opposed to this bill, but I can maybe help clarify some of it because it's it isn't entirely clear, and this bill was new to us as of last week, and in fact, we're just trying to figure out exactly the problem it's intended to solve. The suburban Hennepin, the Three Rivers Park District does not include the city of Minneapolis. It never has included the city of Minneapolis. The levy is spread over suburban Hennepin County. So any notion that there would be redistricting to include at-large elected officials within Hennepin County, you'd have to rewrite the first statute, I would think, or be in violation of it. Right now, all of suburban Hennepin County is represented by elected officials, but they're represented by five. So this would, there's another amended version of this going around that would change it to seven instead of being by district instead of being at-large. So I'm not sure where the bill stands right now. Like I say, we're playing a little bit of catch up here, trying to figure out exactly what the intent is. If that helps, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner, do you know, do they have their own separate taxing authority then without coming back to the county board? And then how does that show up? So property, do they have to have a hearing, or does it show up as a separate line item on the property tax statements?
Mr. Chair, Senator Roebling, there is a separate line item on the suburban Hennepin County property tax statements. Now, I can't tell you exactly if it's a separate line on the bill or if it's in the other taxing districts along with mosquito control and some of the other ones that are within the metro district. But it's only calculated and only suburban Hennepin County taxpayers pay it. And what your other question was?
Is it
Senator Roebling?
They have exclusive levy authority. It doesn't have to come back to the county board?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, they have exclusive levy authority. They have to present to the county board. And if we ask them to go back and look at their budget again and make amendments, they do that. They can override us if they choose to by, I believe, a supermajority. Bo Carlson is here, the assistant superintendent. And that's happened a few years ago. Some of my remarks will get to that.
Senator Kielak.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Commissioner Opat, why is this entity operating outside Hennepin County and Carver and Scott counties?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kielak, that goes back to the original statute, too. It's allowed in the original statute, so that's not
okay.
It's been that way. And quite frankly, that's a subject of conversation when the county board looks at various activities of the Three Rivers District.
Senator Lemmer, we need to make a correct an amendment here, apparently, on line 124.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I would move an oral amendment that we delete the word qualifies and insert qualified. It's a technical, grammatical amendment.
Discussion to the amendment. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. It's adopted. Further discussion. Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a number of questions here, but I'm wondering if maybe we could hear from Commissioner Opat and other people. Maybe that would shed some light on my thinking about this before I ask my questions. Would it be possible for me to hear from them? And then I'd like to ask some questions.
Commissioner Opat.
Mr. Chairman and committee, again, I am here in testifying in opposition to the bill. With me, I brought both a resolution of the Hennepin County Board and one from the Three Rivers Park District Board also in opposition. The county board is overwhelmingly in opposition to this by a 6-1 vote, and the Three Rivers District was, I believe, 6-0 with one abstention. And that's unverified there. To me, this bill is just it's an answer to a problem that doesn't exist. I don't exactly know what it's designed to fix. There's been no consultation with either the county board or Three Rivers. In terms of budgets, if folks are out to look at budget control or something, there's really no story to tell here. I did some research going back to 2009 through 2012 budgets. The Three Rivers budget over that time period has increased 1.3%. The property tax over that time period has decreased 1.6%. The Hennepin County budget has increased 3.2%. Now, there's some other transfers and things that make that a bigger deal, but our property tax has increased by 1.5%. Each of the last 2 years, both of the entities' property taxes has decreased. So there's really nothing there that I can see that's any kind of a something that's a fire. We have to the story of providing a check and balance. My argument would be just to the contrary in terms of oversight. I would argue that there are currently 12 elected officials overseeing this budget and 2 appointed officials. When the Three Rivers District comes before us to present their budget, the testimony gets to be lengthy from time to time. Former Commissioner Steele held firm the position that they should relook at their budgeting for fuel in one particular year, and that resulted in a change. Myself, I asked them some pretty pointed questions about where their capital budgets were being allocated. I mean, I can tell you all six of my colleagues and myself take great care to look over that budget in the course of our many hearings. So things about fees that the district may want to charge, about equity in terms of where the Three Rivers activities are held. I represent the inner-ring suburbs. There's not a Three Rivers operation in my district save for the little outpost on the river. I have a little bit of the Coon Rapids Dam up in Brooklyn Park, and that's the extent of it. There's nothing in Brooklyn Center. There's nothing in Robbinsville. There's nothing in Crystal. There's nothing in New Hope. So I look at that budget because my taxpayers are paying for that. So we provided that check and budget, or that check and balance. More elected positions for specialty districts is not something that comes without a cost. The redistricting already looks like it would be a little bit of something that would have to happen very quickly if it were to happen this year. For our elections department to conduct those two extra elections and draw those districts, I would say it would be a significant set of activities. In consultation with some of my colleagues, particularly Commissioner Randy Johnson, representing Bloomington, and he's, I guess, our resident historian. He remarked to me in an email, and he said he'd be happy to put it into a letter that he really, in terms of folks looking to control property taxes, that the long ballot of local elected officials really only obscures responsibility for property tax levies in a very, very large county like Hennepin. He said that, and this is in an email to me, he said that is why the Republican Party in Hennepin County, going back to 1966, strongly opposed a long ballot for local offices in Hennepin County. Now, I can't confirm or deny that, but that was his response to me. Otherwise, practically speaking, I would just try to remind the committee that the cost of elections is not de minimis. The accountability is there. And then very practically speaking, a Hennepin County Commissioner District is 2.5 times a Minnesota State Senate district. If you want to consider the cost of conducting an election, that any kind of meaningful election, even one piece of literature dropped at every house, and who would even be remotely interested in funding that? If you think there's going to be accountability, like people will know their park commissioner after all that's said and done, then you have a great faith in some sort of power of advertising, because I just don't see it happening. So, again, I can certainly stand for more questions. I think the situation is fine. If the other counties have their own park districts and they're controlled by the county board, and that's elected officials. I'm not here to argue for that. We have not taken that position. I'm just here arguing in opposition to this bill, and I can certainly stand for questions.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wasn't around in the Republican Party in 1966, so I don't know why they arrived at the conclusion that Commissioner Opatz made reference to. I was only 11 years old at the time, but got involved in Republican Party shortly thereafter. So I just wanted to know that what we're really focused on, and we do appreciate the fine holding of a budget down to very small percentage increase every other biennium by the Three River Parks. That's not the issue. The issue is whether or not we govern ourselves at least in the area of the park, this particular park district, by the accountability that's represented by an elected office. If you have two of them appointed by a governing political authority, somehow you reduce the accountability directly to the people. This is really as simple as this bill gets. And it's not really a major political agenda here. We just think that governing of any entity is better in the hands of the public rather than sharing it with a governing authority. It's just that simple. And I do believe that you do get a greater accountability when you put it in the hands of the people and not the bureaucratic function of a government.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Senator Limmer, so I'm just curious, though, if they're appointed by a governing body, is that not accountability? If they're appointed by people that are elected, there is some accountability there for these two people. I mean, it's not totally without accountability. I was just curious what you...
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator McGuire, there is a distant accountability by that, having an appointment from an elected office. But in this particular case, why would a governing authority like a park board share? Why would you have a bifurcated system? I just don't understand that. That, to me, just doesn't even make sense. And it's rarely, if ever, found in governing in modern America today. One could almost think that there's a desire to have a political control on a board when it's appointed only by two members and then the rest are elected. Since when do we have a governing authority have a representational voice in governing?
Okay, would anyone else like to speak for or against Senate File 2369?
And I have another question, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, sometimes I'm thinking that you might want to have a couple of people appointed that may not have a political agenda or may not have a turf, you know, agenda. And so I think that at some point there may be some interest in that because the majority of people are elected. So it's not as if the two people could get, you know, could overturn the board or anything. So I think there may be some validity in having, you know, two people who know a lot about parks or, you know a lot about this. Because sometimes, as much as we would love this electoral process that we have, as we know, it may not always elect the person that actually knows the most about any of these topic areas. And this is a specific topic area that they're elected to, and that is the governing of these parks. But and then one other point I just want to make is I appreciate that you want to have it be all elected, Senator Limmer, but sometimes, you know, if it's not broken, why try to fix it? So I really haven't heard that there's anything really broken about this process. It seems to be working pretty well that they've got over than 2-to-1 majority of elected people to others, and it seems to be that they're managing this park system pretty well.
Senator Eaton.
Senator
Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to add to Senator McGuire's statement that I think that the Hennepin County commissioners are held quite accountable, and that having the opportunity to appoint a couple people who have specific knowledge of the parks and issues related to there is a real advantage. I would oppose this bill.
Senator Roebling.
Senator Limmer, you know, as I look at this, I'm kind of questioning who is going to want to run for the two at-large seats. I realize how big this area could be. It's going to include a lot of communities. And I'm just wondering if we shouldn't just have seven districts within the district so that I just can't imagine because you would really you'd almost have to raise some money to do it. And I don't know that you can get contributions easily for a seat like this. It's going to be hard to campaign for, hard to get your message out.
If you had a series of, you know, maybe three communities or something would make a district, you might be able to get into their local papers and such. But I don't know. It's a big area, and I just don't see who would want to file for it. So, you know, you could easily correct it by just on line 1.18, cross out the 5, make it 7, and then on page 2, get rid of section C there. But I mean, if that's something you consider, I'm just really not sure about moving 2 at-large elected seats to this, only because I just think it wouldn't be a very popular thing to run for.
Senator Eden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did want to add also that I have a concern about the expense of the additional elections. Our budgets have been cut considerably, and I don't see that adding any benefit and just costing more.
Okay. Further discussion? Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, Sarah Roebling, I think you made an excellent suggestion. If we could make it in the form of an oral amendment, I would accept that.
Okay. Can I repeat it?
Senator Roebling.
I think the only place it has to change is on line 1.18, where it says 5 right away. You'd put 7. And then I believe on page 2, you would delete 2.6 through 2.9. Okay.
Pardon me, Senator Roebling, Mr. Chair. We do have an amendment that is in our little reserve pile here that might do exactly what you want. Could I introduce the A1 amendment? I'm sorry to interrupt you, Senator Roebling.
Oh, that's fine.
Senator Limmer, do we have it in our packets?
It'll be handed out.
It's being handed out. Our efficient stand. Senators, or Ms. Dane.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer. Once you all get the amendment on line 1.3 of the amendment, the A1 amendment that is, it makes the change from qualifies to qualified that we already did, so I think we would need to strike line 1.3 so we don't do the same thing twice.
Mr. Chair, I would move that as an amendment to the amendment to strike line 3.
Okay, discussion to the amendment to the amendment. Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then, the park district would draw the new lines based on the census, or I guess I could read it quickly, but if I could just get a little more clarification of how this would now happen, that they now redraw the lines totally, and how do we factor in the 5 people that are already there? Would their districts have to be taken into account, or do they all just run? Maybe this talks about it, but do they all run at once, and so do they all have to run for re-election at the same time? Any staggering terms or anything?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator McGuire. They will be running for staggered terms under both the amendment and the bill as it is. Section B, starting on line 1.18. Sets it up so they will be running staggered terms, and the redistricting piece of it would change their districts into 5 districts, or if we adopt the amendment, then into 7 districts. And as you said, it is the park district that does those redistricting maps.
Further discussion?
Well, Mr. Chair, if I could just
Senator McGuire,
if I could just speak, you know, against the amendment, I think there is actually great value in having appointed members with an elected body, because they would bring a perspective of, as I just want to repeat, sometimes elected officials have turf issues when they represent certain districts. So who's looking out for the regional good of the entire region? And because this is definitely a regional issue, and also, you know, sometimes, you know, political boards get political. And so this would really allow them to, you know, have people on this board that are very experienced at park management. And you're not always guaranteed that when you elect people to these boards. Sometimes the person with the most money, sometimes the person with the most name recognition gets elected. So I think there's a great checks and balances on the existing board, that when you have a very specific task, which this group has, manage this park system, then it really behooves us to make sure that we have at least a few people who understand what that means. And so I'm sure the elected officials will learn that. But I just have to say that I think it's a nice balance, and we've shown, because there haven't been any issues related to this board, that this bill is not trying to fix anything that's not working, that it shows that it is working. And I'm just confused as to why we would try and fix something that doesn't need fixing. We might do some more damage than good.
Mr. Chair, just
Commissioner Opat.
To the amendment, just purely on the details, you know, we've been at redistricting now the county for months, preparing for it, gathering the census materials. Our election department is in full swing. We have consultants to help us draw. You folks were at it for months, and it sustained challenges. The bill currently calls for this to be done in time for the 2012 election. Our plan right now is we must, by law, have our redistricting done by May 2nd. We're going to take the vote on April 24th. Now, this bill came to light a week ago, and we're rewriting it significantly in committee, and I don't know what kind of work you're creating for us at the county with our elections department with this amendment, because I've only seen the amendment about 2 minutes ago. So I would just implore the members of the committee, if you care about the workload you're heaping on local government to solve a problem that doesn't exist, except apparently maybe in the city of Greenfield, from which I've heard had no correspondence, then I'd ask you to consider voting down this amendment, because it doesn't take us anywhere except on a journey to higher expenses, overtime for county staff, possibly a legal challenge. I mean, this is not I'm getting a little worked up here, because this is ridiculous, Mr. Chairman, with all due respect. I mean, to write a law like this that requires this much effort in a month to solve a problem for which I'm still awaiting the definition.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you could look at page 2 or the amendment, line 7, we take out the transition paragraph section 3. That's deleted. So I believe that this would go into effect in the 22 reapportionment year, not in 2012. Then it'll give the county and anyone else who wants to affect it couple years to plan for it, and it's not moving that fast.
So 20. Is that an amendment?
That's part of the A1 amendment.
Oh, that's in the A1 amendment.
Yes.
Okay. So to that amendment, all those in favor of adoption of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
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 Amendment is adopted.
Oh, you mean, is that the amendment to the amendment? Is that the amendment to the amendment?
I think, Mr. Chairman, you can incorporate.
And, Mr. Chair, in reference to Senator Roebling's question about the at-large.
Senator Limmer, there's a question as to what we just adopted. Are we good here?
I'm not sure it was clear if we were adopting the amendment with the amendment incorporated, or if we were adopting the deletion of line 3.
You didn't say. What do we do if we can amend the amendment already?
Senator Limmer could incorporate that amendment into the amendment.
Would you like to do that?
Do that.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Senator Limmer incorporates the amendment to the amendment. Okay, now Senator Kulesh.
Mr. Chair, on Section 5 on the effective date, line 2.20 says, and apply subdivisions effective the day after the Board of Commissioners.
Oh, we will have to make the reference.
Apply to the election park commissioners at 2012 general election and thereafter.
Senator Limmer.
Council might be able to help us. That was a reference that I did not catch. On line 21, the reference to the 2012 general election, would that have to be changed to correspond with the removal of Section 3?
Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, I apologize. I also did not catch that. Yes, to match up with the deletion of Section 3, that would need to be changed to 2022 election.
Yeah.
Care to incorporate that, Senator Limmer?
I do, okay. Mr. Chair.
Okay, we do. Okay, we need to vote on that. The amendment to the, could you state the amendment then?
On page 2, line 21, delete 2012 and insert 2022.
Discussion. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Okay, motion prevails. Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair, then I'm, did we already delete section 4? Because if the effective date doesn't apply until 2020, then why are we deleting the section 4, which is the governing structure for how they're appointed until 2020, appointed or elected?
Ms. Stanley.
Give me a minute.
Senator, take a minute. Senator, see.
Mr. Chair, I just think this Senator is Seaton. A good example of how this bill isn't, as we say sometimes, quite ready for prime time. Mm-hmm. Maybe Senator Limmer would consider pulling it back and working with the county, and maybe if they realize it's an effective date of 2020, they'd be more willing to talk about it with them and could bring the bill back. But it doesn't seem like this is at all ready to move forward at this time.
Senator Cruz.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to echo Senator Sieben's comments on that, maybe for a little bit different reasons. I would vehemently disagree that there's no need to make a change here. I think I gave you a couple of great examples of reasons why we should have something done differently with the management of the park district. I would rather see us head in the direction of taking that more into local control, giving more of this control over to the counties, maybe getting rid of this regional park district altogether, to be honest with you. So I guess I would, Senator Limmer, I would also echo that, and maybe we can get together with the counties and try and work towards that direction.
Well, I suppose we can kick this can around the room all day long. And, some will be. Everyone will have a good, respectful discussion about it. But in light of some of the questions, I would request we lay the bill on the table.
Senator Limmer, we're going to lay the bill over.
Get over. That's okay. That's right.
Next bill on the agenda is Senate File 2370.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to just let everyone know that when I was a correction officer at Hennepin County Workhouse, that's where I met Mike Opat. By the
we
way,
had time together.
Yeah, he actually was a correction officer too. So.
Okay.
That's going back almost 30 years. I hate to admit that.
Okay, Senator Limmer, Senate File 2370.
Mr. Chair, Senate File 2370 involves how we handle municipal consent for land acquisition created by a watershed district. And the better introduce this concept, this bill. I still have Senator or Mayor here for comment on the bill.
Proceed with your testimony. Could you state your name for the tape?
Yes, my name is Jerry Hertas, Mayor of City of Greenfield. again, we have a situation with several layers of water management organizations, water districts, managing our water standards within the state. And not all areas are applied equally in terms of what type of organization has jurisdiction over water management issues. In the case of water districts, again, we have unelected individuals who are appointed, who have a taxing authority. And what this bill is proving to do is to create a situation where if a water district is acquiring real property, that they have to get a resolution from the local community or the city supporting that acquisition.
And Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Why only Hennepin County? You know, watershed districts, by and large, are not elected bodies. And if an elected body
says this, well, this hasn't been in your plan. We think we should have a look at it. We think we should have some authority over it. I think that's a good idea because I think that watershed districts need some more oversight. And so I like this, but I would love to take out on line 1.12 in Hennepin County and just say
Senator
a watershed
district. Senator Rubling moves to be on line 112, delete in Hennepin County. Discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Stevens.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Roebling, I think that that is not unlike the Washington County bill that we had up earlier a month or so ago. This is such a significant change that Senator Roebling proposing that I would think that we should maybe get the watershed districts in here to talk about it. It doesn't seem like they would have sufficient time to come and just on the fly here comment, so I would be reluctant to do that.
Senator Sieben, I think that we know what the watersheds might say, but that there's an overriding philosophical belief here that appointed tax levying entities are not as accountable as we wish they would be, and to not just simply say that the local city, I mean, we talked about local control extensively here, but when it comes down to actually giving the locals control, then there seems to be a lot of resistance. So that's, I think this is just a local control issue on land acquisition.
Well, Senator Mr. Cruz. Chair.
Senator Stephen.
Just to follow up, this is the local government committee. I think it would only be fair that if we're making that big of a change, I'm not saying that I'm necessarily opposed to it again, just that we would give the watershed districts time to come in and testify on it.
Well, Senator Stephen, are they wouldn't be here for this bill?
They're here. Some
they
of
are. Okay, Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is actually, I'm in support of this amendment. I think this is a great idea. I would only ask staff if this, I just want to make sure that this is doing what we're intending to do, because I know sometimes these statutes are specific to counties. So I just want to make sure that we touch base that these exact statute numbers are, that when we do this, we are actually changing all statute, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Stangle, are you ready? Would you like a few minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Chapter 103D applies to all watershed districts. It's not county specific, so that would apply statewide.
Okay,
Senator,
thank you, Ms.
Stengel. Senator
Keeler. Yeah, Mr. Chair, one of the things that these watershed districts is implement some of the Clean Water Act and other things that are under the purview of the Department of Natural Resources, Bowser, et cetera. And I'm not sure if what the ramifications are there. So this ought to at least go into the department, into the Environment and Natural Resources Committee, to make sure that we're not crippling their ability to conform to other state or federal laws on this.
Senator Kalash, that is where we plan to send it.
That is where you plan to send it?
To Environment, I believe. Yes. Okay. Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm guessing we're going to hear from the watershed districts. I'd like to hear from them, but I'll ask my question so they can maybe answer it, but I just want to make sure that I understand. It says that a watershed district may acquire property only if the governing body of that city or town says they can, unless the plan adopted by the watershed district already identifies that as land for acquisition.
Right.
That's all I'm reading. So the watershed says here's the land we're going to acquire, so it's part of a plan. So then the city, the local government can't stop it, or if it's part of the plan. So all the watershed district has to do is make this plan, and it has to be part of that. Otherwise, if there's no plan, then they can only take the property if the city says they can. And while I'm asking that question, I have a question about in the greater good of the watershed district, which sits underneath all these towns. Mm-hmm. Like, what if a town says, no, you can't, but it's for the benefit of the entire population that sits on top of this
big watershed. So it seems hard for me to understand that one city would stop this from happening when it's really benefiting the whole region. So if the watershed people could come up and maybe address both of those questions, you know, one about what this amendment really says, but, you know, with the plan and everything, and the other about how are we getting in the way of really protecting our watershed and our water for the whole region.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would contend that if it is a benefit for the whole area, it should have been in the plan. And so these surprise purchases are what cities are asking for some authority over, because the plan goes through a process of review and, you know, meeting, public hearings and things like that. And so people have an opportunity for input. But if all of a sudden there's some purchase that they want to do that is outside of the plan, I think they should have local support for that. And they haven't had any opportunity, so this would give them that opportunity. And if it, I mean, I often think if it's really a good plan, the local community would give them a resolution. And I think a resolution only has to be approved by a simple 3/5. So it shouldn't be the most difficult thing to do if it's a good proposal.
Senator Limmer, to the amendment.
Well, Mr. Chair, I wasn't thinking so grandiose in perspective. Going statewide, we were hoping that we would just take care of our local issue in Hennepin County. The committee wants to go statewide. I guess I would like to hear. We have representatives from the League of Minnesota Cities who wish to speak in favor of the bill, and maybe we can get them to have a comment on the amendment.
Certainly. Thank you, Senator Limmer. Could you state your name for the tape, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. The bill as introduced is one that the League was not involved in drafting or promoting, but obviously it supports local authority, local elected decision making. So we were supportive of that concept involved in it in the first place, which would make sense. I'm sure you'd agree. Expanding it statewide is a similar issue. This is what our local folks are elected to do, is make decisions about land use. I would add a couple of specific points. Just one is that this is a very rare occasion where there's a conflict between the local water management structure, whatever it is, and a city. It's not frequent, but when it does happen, it can be pretty meaningful. And secondly, just a reminder for folks, and this doesn't apply as much with watershed districts, but just overall, cities do not receive payment in lieu of taxes for land that's removed from tax rolls. Counties and townships do. Watershed districts aren't responsible for making those payments in any event, but as a reminder, cities have a limited border, and when chunks of land are removed from development, it means the development has to be pushed to outside the city or elsewhere within the city. It can be very, very problematic in a hurry, especially if it was not part of the city's plan for how that land was going to be used. So for that reason, we find this to be helpful for those cases where there is conflict between a water management structure and the local elected community.
Mr. Chair?
Hey, Senator,
could you give an example of where this has happened?
Mr. Chair, Senator, no, I actually do not have a specific example. As I said, we weren't actually promoting this legislation to deal with any specific problem, but we do have a number of communities where there are multiple watershed districts making decisions. I think we have folks in the room where they have three or even four watershed districts that divide their city into chunks based on where the water flows. Each of those can have different requirements. Each of those can be planning on doing different things with land within that city. And this would allow the city to at least have some consistency in how they're choosing as a community to do things. I would also add, cities have a very specific requirement that relates to this for watershed management for stormwater. In a city with an MS4 stormwater permit is required by federal law to be doing certain things to manage stormwater within their community. This would give them at least the ability to decide whether a given project fit in with their plan for how stormwater was going to be managed in their community.
Any further discussion to the Roebling Amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. To the bill as amended. Further discussion? Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could we hear from somebody in the watershed area? Or I don't know, Mr. Carlson is up here. I would just like to hear what they think about this. I don't know that much about this issue, so I'd love to hear.
Mr. Carlson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
State your name for the tape, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Joel Carlson, and I own a legal research and government affairs business in St. Paul, and I have long represented the Minnehaha Creek Watershed District, I think going back to 1994, and we welcome this opportunity to talk with this committee about the watershed approach to water management. And we usually toil away in the Environment Committee on this issue, but and we're happy to go there as well. But you need to know that Minnesota is a leader in the creation of watershed districts, which they formed in the 1960s because the legislature determined that water is controversial. You either have too little or too much, and that water quality and flood control projects, they determined, do not flow over political boundaries. And so that's why the legislature created watershed districts in the first place, because it was easy and sometimes common to approve a local project within your municipality that had significant downstream impacts. And that's why the legislature has created watershed districts, so that we can have a coordinated approach to water management. And they need to take into consideration when they do that the local development needs and impacts, but also how that project is going to impact the community down the road. And it's happened throughout communities across the state, whether it's Rochester or up in my area in the Red River Valley. It is a significant problem, and watershed districts have been extremely effective in managing our surface water in Minnesota. You need to know that our concern about the legislation is not that a watershed district couldn't purchase property without the approval of a local unit of government. That has never happened. It's never happened. We work cooperatively with our communities, and we always get their approval for a project, whether it's a flood control project or a land acquisition. Our concern, though, is that with a requirement that we couldn't purchase without their approval, you could have, as Senator McGuire indicated, a significant project. Our watershed district, Minnehaha Creek, which is the largest urban watershed in the country, runs from Long Lake all the way through to Minnehaha Falls, and much of the property in between on Minnehaha Creek. If you had a municipality that objected to a flood control project that has significant impact, and its property impact across the district, whether it's taking a property out of the floodplain or an important flood project, you have one municipality that objects to that project or an acquisition, even when you have a willing seller of the property, that makes it almost impossible for us to fulfill our statutory mission that the legislature has put on watershed districts.
Senator Roebling, to that point.
Mr. Carlson, if you have a significant flood control project, would it not be in the plan? So this is only addressing those instances when it has not been included in a plan that has been approved by Bowser. So I guess that's what we're addressing here, not that they could stop any project, but any project that hasn't been put into the plan previously.
Yeah. Mr. Carlson.
Excellent point, Senator Roebling, and I don't want to cross swords with you, and I never like to do that, but you need to know that a watershed district never designates individual property in its plan, and they don't do that for important reasons. Number one, just in a negotiating process, you don't say, we're going to buy this parcel of property, because it takes away all of our ability to acquire a parcel of property at a reasonable value when you've put it in your plan and you've designated that property. So the language relative to the plan simply gives us no comfort at all, because we never designate specific parcels of property. And that is a problem. Our projects in general are described and approved in a plan, the designated real property is never going to be in there. I think, is for sound policy reasons. So I understand the concern, but you need to know the plans are not that specific. The language, although it's unclear, also we think has the potential to interfere with the a watershed district acquiring acquiring drainage easements and easements on property, conservation easements. It doesn't say purchase real property and fee. It just says acquire real property or an interest in real property. We have a significant number of projects in our district where we do not acquire the property, but we will, we will get an easement on the property, both for access to the land or for water impoundment. And this language, which would require a municipal approval of an easement, would make the process extremely cumbersome. And I think that's something that the Environment Committee would thoroughly, debate as to how broad and expansive this language would be. But again, I just, want the committee to know it isn't that a watershed district wants to acquire property without municipal consent, because that is how it is done currently, and we're unaware of a single case where it hasn't. But you could enter into a situation in the future. Think of the Red River Flood Diversion Project right now, one that I happen to be aware of. All of the communities up and down the Red River Valley and that significant investment of public funds, you could have one municipality that wouldn't approve the acquiring a piece of property and could frustrate that entire flood control, almost a $1 billion flood control project up and down the Red River Valley. So we urge caution. We're happy. I've talked with Senator Limmer about this bill, and he's very sincere about making sure local units of government work together, and we share that. But we do have significant concerns about how this would operate in its application. And I know Ray Bone is here from the Association of Watershed Districts, and if there are questions about Minnehaha Creek, I have James Whisker, who's the Minnehaha Creek's Director of Planning and Projects, and he'd be much better to answer questions about specific projects than I. With that, Mr. Chair, I have Mr. Bone provide some comments on the broader watershed issue now that the bill has been amended.
Did you care to comment, Mr. Bone?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ray Bone. I'm here representing the Minnesota Association of Watershed Districts. I am not going to repeat anything Joel said, because he said it very, very well. The one thing, the one element I want to add, especially with your amendment, is that we're not totally sure how this is going to affect agricultural drainage and the ability of watershed districts to purchase easements or actually purchase some outright lands. Right now, we're moving into a new phase with agricultural drainage. We're dealing with issues called conservation drainage, where, in fact, we look for areas where we can actually hold water back. And in the process of holding that water back in the agricultural drainage, we will have to purchase land on behalf of that ditch authority, and we're going to have to figure out how to do that. And if in fact many of our main drainage ditches go through cities at some point or a municipality, and I don't know how this is going to impact that. But if you wanted to do improve a ditch, or if you wanted to, for example, repair a ditch, sometimes if you repair a ditch, you want to slope it out and flatten it down a little bit, and sometimes you have to acquire additional land. Whether, again, you have to purchase it or through easement. So I would say making this, it was a problem before the amendment, it is a major problem with the amendment. So we would definitely oppose this legislation.
Yes. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also have a representative from the city of Plymouth that wishes to speak in favor of the bill. We kind of blasted past him, and we don't want to do that.
Certainly. Have your testifier come up.
Yeah.
You could state your name for the record, sir. Welcome to the committee.
My name is Derek Ashey. I'm the water resource manager for the city of Plymouth. Part of my job is to manage some of the different regulations and rules that are out there, whether it be watershed districts, other watershed management organizations, whether it's the DNR, the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and some of the things that come from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and other agencies. And I support this bill. I feel that this bill really assists the city in meeting its own statutory obligations to improve water quality. But also I believe it helps watershed districts do the same thing. I think the goal is common, that we want to make these improvements. And I think this bill provides some of that coordination, provides both cities and watershed districts with the ability to look at the projects and look at the direction that the improvements are going in a municipality, and ultimately end up with a better product. Most of the other things that I had to say actually have already been said. So I can certainly stand for questions, and I know the mayor of Plymouth, Kelly Slavik, is here as well.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Does the mayor, I'd be happy to ask my question after the mayor wants to say anything.
Why don't we have the mayor come up?
Certainly.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. Can you state your name for the tape, please?
Thank you. My name is Kelly Slavik, and I am the mayor of Plymouth. And thank you for allowing me to speak here today. I'm here to support the bill as well. My community has four watersheds, and one watershed in particular, the Minnehaha Creek Watershed District, has taxing authority. They collect over $270,000 from our taxpayers. The three other watersheds in our community collect collectively $260,000. The City of Plymouth greatly recognizes the importance of water quality. We work very hard to ensure water quality in every development we approve, every redevelopment, every project that comes forward. There is always a component related to water quality. We have spent millions of dollars within our community cleaning up water. But I also feel that it's important for a taxing jurisdiction such as a watershed, especially one that has an appointed board, to work with local government and elected officials to cooperatively support water quality initiatives. A city such as Plymouth that contributes a large amount of money to a watershed should have some say in how that money is spent, especially if the spending is for something that would reduce our ability to collect taxes for things like the watershed. When the watershed purchases property, it's removing the land from the tax base, and it puts an additional burden on other remaining residents and taxpayers in our community. We are very accountable to the taxpayers in our community. Plymouth has struggled with our budget, as many other cities around the state have. We have not raised our budget in the last 3 years, but when we have a taxing jurisdiction coming into our community, taking land away from us, we are really going to be struggling even further. We've laid off over 10% of our workforce in our city, and every dollar that comes in is very valuable to us, and removing those really puts a burden on us and really erodes our local control as well. I think the testimony that you heard that the watershed is worried about that this may limit their ability to protect water quality, I think it's completely ridiculous. Cities have an obligation ourselves to protect property and the water quality associated with it. In no way would requiring cities to consent on a land purchase inhibit the watershed's ability to perform an obligation that we share with them. The watershed's comment on our plans, they require calculations and practices that ensure water quality regulations are followed. A property purchase is not necessary to ensure that. If every time a property had an issue with water quality, would it really be necessary to have a watershed come in and purchase that property to protect it? I think that's what cities are for. That's what elected officials are for. That's what the rules and regulations are for that we follow every day. The city has completed many water quality projects in our city with cooperation from watersheds. Those properties do not have to be purchased to do so. I think it's common sense that cities can work together with these watersheds to improve water quality without the millions of dollars being sent to purchase properties to control it. I think the rules and regulations will do that sufficiently. And I think if property purchase is that important, it should really be the last tool in the toolbox that watersheds are using. And by allowing them to purchase property without the cities being involved and having an active voice hurts us in the end. The City of Plymouth is still a developing community. We have density requirements that the Metropolitan Council is requiring us to meet. Very difficult because the land we have left is very full of natural attributes like bluffs and streams and ponds and wetlands. We can't meet the Met Council's density requirements, and then when we have a watershed coming in and taking land out of that developable stage, we go even further down in trying to meet their requirements. So I think that the watersheds don't always have the ability to see what cities are looking at. We spend a lot of time with our comprehensive plan updates to the Metropolitan Council determining density and how to develop in a very slow and methodical manner. And I think that removing these parcels when we're already protecting the water makes absolutely no sense and really erodes local control in our community and communities across the state.
Thank you. Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mayor. So have there been instances where the watershed has come in and taken property that you thought they shouldn't take then? Do you have specific examples in your city, in Plymouth, where they've actually done this?
I do not have specific examples of instances where they have purchased property. However, I do have several examples of instances where they have not worked cooperatively with the city of Plymouth, not necessarily around a land purchase, but in other areas.
Okay, so, Mr. Chair, if I could. So that's unfortunate. I mean, definitely they should be working with the cities. I agree. But then, so then this bill is not going to probably solve that problem, that they're not talking to you in other ways that we think, you know, they should be obviously working with cities. And so you mentioned some really good, values that cities have about, you know, making sure there's a good tax base, and I understand all of that. So I am nervous, though, with a bill like this where there is an entity, the Watershed District, that's responsible for this huge, massive body of water underneath all these cities, and that if one city, you know, says, well, we can't afford to have our tax base affected, you know, yes, we care about water, but we care about our tax base a little more, and then the Watershed District isn't actually able to do what they're supposed to do to protect that huge body of water for everybody above it. And I'm nervous about cities not being able to veto what a watershed district is, you know, needing to do in those cases. So I could ask you the question. I could also ask the watershed, you know, what protection is there in place so that watersheds don't unnecessarily infringe on cities? I mean, I don't think watersheds should be necessarily infringing on cities either. But I do think that there are going to be competing interests, water quality, tax base, and that they're going to maybe come in conflict. And I don't know that I want to see. I just don't see it in favor of water quality because that affects a lot of people, and so I do come down on the side where I want our water to be protected. So anyway, I've thrown out some questions here. If you could address them, either Mr. Carlson or
Mr. Chairman.
Mayor.
If I could just respond quickly.
Yeah.
Well, that's what the rules and regulations are for. There's a water quality plan. The cities have the ability to comment on it. There's public comment. There's hearings. There's a long process involved around it. That's what those rules and regulations are for, to protect water. Mm-hmm. Regardless of our tax base, if we're struggling because our tax base is reduced, we'll cut something or we'll raise taxes. We won't compromise, and we do not compromise on water quality in the city. My point is you don't have to own a piece of property or purchase a piece of property with tax dollars to ensure water quality. That's what the rules and regulations are for. Why do you have to buy it? Why do you have to control it? Why do you have to try to hold on to it and try to redevelop it in a few years? It makes no sense to me. The measures are in place to create great water quality, and we're doing that. And I don't think you need to buy a piece of property to do that.
Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And just preface my remarks by reminding members that water is controversial, and what the city doesn't like, when a city, not Plymouth, but a city might not like because of watershed district authority or plans or permitting, you just need to know that watershed districts are creature of statute. You've given us the only powers that we have come from the legislature. So if we're adopting or enforcing a rule, it's a rule that the legislature has authorized or mandated a watershed district to do. We have yearly public hearings, planning on our budget. We have public hearings on any land acquisition. Nothing is done in secret. It is all done in the open. We've never had our district has never had a purchase, and I'm not aware of anyone statewide in the 43 districts watersheds that we have where there hasn't been cooperation with the local unit of government on a land acquisition. But you need to know with a question, why would a watershed district purchase it? We've had a couple of purchases of property in our district in Hopkins and St. Louis Park where they have acquired property to protect the stream bank. And then they have done their restoration on the stream bank, which is very important for downstream impacts for erosion and water quality. And once that stream has been stabilized, the rest of the property either goes back to the municipality or is sold for private use. So they absolutely have to have the ability to acquire that that property to do the work to stabilize the creek bank. And those are the ones that are, you know, I'm most familiar with in our district, where they purchase property specifically for a conservation or water quality purpose, and only the amount of land that they need to fulfill their the challenge that they have on restoring the creek bank. The other point that I think we need to make clear on the record is that, you know, for Greenfield or for much of Plymouth that have overlapping water management organizations, those are not watershed districts. Greenfield isn't represented by a watershed district. Much of Plymouth is not represented by a watershed district. This bill only applies to watershed districts, but you have a significant layer of water management organizations where this requirement wouldn't be applicable. And we're here to, you know, talk about watershed districts. And
Senator Roebling,
stand that
question,
Mr. Chair. But this doesn't apply to many water management organizations.
Thank you. And I have an idea on how we might address the bill a little bit, but. As long as Mr. Carlson brought it up, I wanted to talk about this Minnehaha Creek Watershed District purchase of this land in Hopkins and St. Louis Park to stabilize the creek bed. And Mr. Carlson, could you tell us what the county's assessed value of that property was before the purchase?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Roebling, I don't know that I can tell you what the estimated market value of the property was and when it was last valued by the county. I can tell you that we had a market appraisal done for the property prior to purchase and that they paid the appraised price from an independent appraiser. I can't tell you exactly when the county had last valued it and what it was, but I know that they had an appraisal done by an independent appraiser and they paid the appraised price, which, by the way, was brought to us by the City of Hopkins. We didn't seek that property out. That was something the City of Hopkins that brought to us that we partnered with, and that property is not taken off of the tax rolls, as kind of was indicated. The Watershed District continues to pay property tax on that property. Is doing the work.
Can we get to the answer then?
Well, no, because I've seen some news reports on this and realized that the price paid was way above the assessed value of the property, and they did some work on the property. I think it was maybe an 11-acre site, and now you're redeveloping it. And I don't know if the Watershed District is doing this, or if the city took over that project after the stabilization of the creek bed was done. It was a very interesting project because of the cost. Was the purchase price $11 million or some high amount like that?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, I think that is about accurate within some range of around $10 to $11 million, which I think is what the appraisal was. The Watershed District and the city, when they sell that property back, will recoup all or most of that money. So it was an initial outlay to acquire the property to do the environmental work that they wanted to do in the city. But then the balance of the property goes back to the city for them to sell. The taxpayers will be, we think, fully reimbursed when that property is sold for commercial development by the City of Hopkins.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I just want to ask one more question. Was it a willing seller or not?
Yes, very much so.
Okay.
Okay, Senator Limmer, did you have any other?
Well, Mr. Chair, just one more thing. I heard Mr. Carlson say that that we don't necessarily designate specific properties. So I've been sitting here trying to think of a way to reword this language so that it would be more generally in the plan that they were showing. So I'm wondering, and maybe Senate Council could help me with this, if we said on line 1.15, and we after the comma, it says, unless the property
is included in the most current plan adopted by the watershed district, and then under section 103.B, and approved by the water and approved by the Board of Water and Soil Resource, period. And then eliminate the rest of it, because then it would have to be in their plan, and it would get rid of that idea that you're designating the real property or a specific piece of property for acquisition. It would just have to be in the general plan. I don't know if that helps or not, but I'm thinking if they are planning projects, they usually put some kind of parameters around the project plan, and maybe they don't say this property and this property and this property are going to be acquired, but they show a general framework of where the project will occur, and it would have to be in that general area.
How about
area.
If it was impacted by the most current plan?
The property is impacted.
Or would that be too general?
What did you think, Ms. Stengel? Unless the property is included in the most current plan adopted by the watershed district. Because I'm thinking plans are more general, and it wouldn't have to be a specific designation then that piece of property is included. It would be in a general area that is shown on the plan to be as a potential area for this project to go.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Roebling, I think you're right. It would be less specific, but it would still somehow have to be indicated, whether that's part of a map or saying this area over here. So I'm not – maybe the watersheds could answer if that's at all helpful. I don't know what level of specificity they get into, if they would even get into anything that would include areas of property or not.
And Mr. Chair, I could work with Senator Limmer on this. If it's going to the Environment Committee, we could work on an amendment that would address this specific concern that we don't want to say we're designating an exact property.
Further discussion on Senate File 2370. Yes. McGuire.
Okay, I was going to get up for a second. No, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I am concerned because now we've actually made this statewide also, and we do see that there's some issues here. I appreciate what Senator Roebling's trying to do, but I don't know if you can come up with anything, because anybody who's going to look at that map is going to up their price. If they're anywhere near it, they're going to up their price for any property that might be available. But I would just say that I have concerns about this, and I repeat that now that we've made it statewide, this is a really overreaching bill. And I know that Senator Limmer is thoughtful and wants to do the right thing, and I'm just wondering if we need to hold this one over for more thought, and so we can actually have a discussion of this, because we still haven't actually seen where there's been a problem. I mean, I think they're thinking they're anticipating that something could go wrong, but we haven't seen that that's happening. And so I know that there has been no indication that this hasn't worked. And so I just would ask that we not pass this out of this committee in such sweeping form that it's got statewide impact, without, you know, letting it be out there for a while. We've just put this amendment on in this committee now, and, you know, we haven't given a lot of due diligence and notice to the public. So
okay, further
I would just ask the chair to consider that.
Mr. Chair, we do have another testifier at the table.
Could you state your name for the tape, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is James Whisker. I'm the Director of Projects and Planning for the Minnehaha Creek Watershed District. At this time, I don't know that I've got anything else to add. It sounds like the committee members have a pretty good handle on the overall issue. But I guess to reinforce the points that Mr. Carlson made, watershed districts are required by statute to go through a long-range planning process every 10 years, and that plan outlines specific water resource issues, goals, and the potential capital projects and potential acquisition areas to meet those goals. And that plan, by virtue of being a long-range comprehensive plan and the watershed districts covering multiple municipalities, is done in extremely close coordination with our member communities and the counties and all the various state agencies that touch on water before it's sent up to the Board of Water and Soil Resources for approval. So beyond that, during the implementation of specific projects that are identified in the plan or land areas, It's been our experience that watershed districts do work in close coordination with our communities. As Mr. Carlson pointed out, some of the specific examples, communities are coming to us with requests for projects. And those are examples where, to Senator McGuire's point, the benefit in those areas benefits communities far downstream, such as Minneapolis, where you have Lake Hiawatha that's impaired and under federal and state mandates to be cleaned up. Oftentimes, the area where you can achieve the greatest water quality benefit is not directly adjacent to that resource, but it's the source of the pollution. And that's really why the legislature recognized that water needed to be managed on a more regional basis. And so with our existing spirit of cooperation, with our long-range plan outlining the various projects and lands that we need, like Mr. Carlson said, we have concerns that the proposed legislation would essentially provide local government veto over projects that are identified using sound science and developed in collaboration and coordination with willing property owners. It would also affect the private property owners' rights insofar that I think 103D allows private property owners to gift or donate real property, and that would also require municipal approval for donations, and that does happen.
Okay, thank you. And I think the water issue and the environmental issues are for the Environment Committee, where this is going. The local control issue is here in this committee, and so we're going to vote on the bill. All those in favor, or Senator Limmer renews his motion or moves that Senate File 2370 as amended be recommended to pass and be referred to the Environment Committee. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no.
No.
No. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
There will be no further business before the committee. This meeting is adjourned.
Hold on to your water.